Hi, I'm Busisiwe, and you are listening to This Rant. This Rant is a weekly podcast about twillectualism, Tumblr philosophy, and trap politics. And this week, I rant about the Stofila funeral, self-care, self-love, self-acceptance, and the local government elections. So recently in Politricking, we had the Stofila funeral. Reverend Stofila's funeral was legit Zuma's fall at a funeral and in true ANC style. So let me place this twisted tale in context. These were MK veterans, and funerals, especially from around the 1970s, were the only opportunity for conscientizing masses. And the ANC, like many liberation movements, used these congregations of people to give political addresses. Now, to be clear, this has not just been happening in South Africa, but globally. Funerals are used to communicate political messages. In this country especially, political messaging has a long and specific history to what we saw happen at Reverend Stofila's funeral. And especially for this organization, speaking to the minds and hearts of people and inspiring civic action at funerals is nothing new. Like, not for the ANC, right? We even saw it, like, most recently done on a global stage at Dr. Mandela's funeral, which was used to canvass for votes. So this is not new, it's not strange, it's not rude to the family. What it is exciting and curious, not just because it's a death at a funeral, but because these are the elders of the organization in its current iteration, and the political enemy that they are addressing is themselves. They are speaking to the allegedly apparent self-destruction of the ANC. And Tatu Pikiana in particular singles out one perceived source of destruction: the president of both the party and the republic. Now, Tatu Pikiana gave a 30-minute tribute in which he spoke of Tatu Stofile's grief, and he creates this imagery of a particular time in history, and an implied kind of comparison between that time and this time by invoking Dr. Khobusan. He speaks directly of Dr. Khobusan and kind of calls him to this panel of elders that he convenes. But he also uses a quote, which is the title of an anthology of work, Yake, Dr. Khobusane, Zemking Komo Makwalandin. I thought that was powerful. And the poetry of his address I found particularly powerful, because the way that he does it is that he convenes a panel of elders using Dr. Khobusane, right? Speaking to a particular generation of African intellectuals. Dr. Khobusane is plugged into a global network of African and diasporic intellectuals, of Pan-Africanist intellectuals, who would lobby all over the world for the independence of the African peoples all over the world, but particularly in Africa, and for the importance of African peoples to have their own political leadership, right? So when he speaks of Dr. Khobusane, he's convening this panel of leaders because all the people associated to Dr. Khobusane, even if their ideologies didn't match specifically, but all those people, he kind of calls them to a panel to hear his address. He calls the likes of the first ANC 100, right? He calls the ANC elders who are more famous, that we know by name, and he mentions those ones by name. He calls the likes of W.E.D. E.B. Du Bois and other contemporaries of Dr. Khobusane to this panel by speaking of Khobusane and using the particular imagery of his address, right? And then the interesting thing that he does is that he has their memory. And our collective minds debate the case that he presents, right? So he doesn't, like, decide for them that, like, if such and such were there, they would be doing this. What he does do is he decides for the people who are sitting in front of us. There's a moment where he shoots another shot where he says, if you're not familiar with Dr. Khobosane, he is someone who by today's culture and rhetoric would be known as a clever black. Now, let us not forget that the current leadership of the ANC often uses the phrase to describe a particular group, a particular type of black intelligentsia, right? Of black academics. And not even academics, but just like black people who sometimes disagree with them are labeled clever blacks. And that was an instance, again, that kind of let us know where the beginner stood and that he is essentially hurtful. And so he offers a resolution, right? He presents this case, he offers a resolution. And the resolution that he offers, I think, is particularly very deliberate because he wrote this address expecting to give it in the presence of Babzum. And he even stated that he's disappointed that the president isn't present. This is why I need to highlight that the president has been doing a lot of valuable policy and allyship work all over the region and globe. So his optics of not being present at this moment make it seem as though he's hiding and letting others take the fire. I think it can be argued that there are really important reasons that he happens not to be around, right? Because I also don't think that they foresaw an outcome like this. So the schedule was scheduled for business as usual after local government elections. But back to the poetry of that began his address. I found it spectacular. It was revealing and layered and intentional. I was disappointed that the news focused on the scandals as much as they did. I mean, I appreciate that they focused on the facts, right? Like, this is what he said, this is who was there. But then they focused on the scandal and really highlighted the soundbite of him calling for President Zuma to step down. Both the ANC and as president of the country. So that's why I spoke about the poetry of his address more so. Also because I don't know how this is going to end. I have my suspicions, I have my hopes, and I have my fears. The only thing I don't have really is the answer to one question, one very important question. Shonda Rhimes, is all of this you? The man who lived. Hidden in plain view of society is a world that flaunts a different set of rules. If you look closely, you'll see it in the flick of a robe or flashing light. What you'll also see is a world at war with itself. Factions within its structures of power consistently engaged in battle, all in the hopes of wielding control of the power. Were this an ideal world, it would be easy to identify the Death Eaters, Voldemort, Dumbledore, the Weasleys, even Harry Potter. But this is the real political world of South Africa. Okay, that whole ruse was to illustrate how reducing the results of the local government elections of this year to a fairy tale or children's book is patronizing and lacks insight. Reducing this to beef between a father and son to some prodigal son tale is patronizing and lacks insight. Because South Africa's government elections were not about Zuma and Malema. The constituency's decisions were not about Zuma and Malema. The decisions of the leaders that those voters chose were not about Zuma and Malema. It's patronizing to reduce the concerns and motives of a nation to two men. Like, there were about 16 million of us who voted this year. So by the father-son logic, all 16 million of us are not concerned about the disparity between civic services and infrastructure available in townships and suburbs. No. We're not concerned about bridging the gap between the quality of education and resources available to schools in townships and suburbs. No. We're not concerned about effectively implementing and applying policies that we agree with. No. We're not concerned about how former Model C schools are generally a law unto themselves because they are mostly privately funded. No. What we're concerned about is Zuma and Malema. By that father-son logic. I find it incredibly disappointing, especially because that kind of reduction was being touted by people who claim to be pan-Africanist while also at the same time reducing our decision-making capabilities to beef between two men by people who claim to have the best interests of Africa's poor, Africa's women and children, while reducing our decision-making capability to two men. Like, essentially, that logic says that our whole process was a dance between two dicks. Like, it was a dick measuring contest. It was trying to see, like, who like, it's so frustrating. When I first started hearing it, when I first started seeing it, when it first started occurring, I got deeply saddened because I was like, how dare you? So the only reason people voted the way that they did is because of these two men. Because none of any of the other reasons are as valid as being with or against one of these men. It's like too much of a stretch to think that people probably voted a particular way because of their day-to-day circumstances. That's such a reach, right? That would never happen in South Africa's democracy. In South Africa's democracy, people vote according to two men. I wish it was just about those two men. I wish it were, because if it were, then the solution would be really easy. You give them related ones and you have them battle it out and remodel the school at the same time, right? Although that would mean that people would still die unnecessarily, because things are never that easy. Even in fictional worlds, Dobby and Sirius still die. But just like Dobby and Sirius will live forever in our hearts, reducing a nation's concerns and motives and decisions to beef between a father and son will forever be an asshole move. So this week, in Just Being Me, I'm talking self-care, self-love, self-acceptance. And I want to start out by asking a question. Does self-care, self-love, self-acceptance, right? Do all of these need to be happening at the same time? Like, do you reckon that you need to love and accept yourself in order to practice effective self-care? Respond by emailing me thisrantpodcast@gmail.com or tweet me or show up in the Instagram comments or Snapchat me and hashtag your response this rant. This topic was inspired by conversations on the interwebs, right? In body positive and mental health circles. This is a conversation that's happening about whether or not the pressure to love and accept yourself when practicing self-care is destructive. Like, you know, all, I love my body. Round is a shape. Oh, my stretch marks are tiger marks. My stretch marks are battle scars. Like that whole kind of, I need to force myself to love whatever it is that I maybe have a contemptuous relationship with. I'm about myself, or to accept it in order to be practicing effective self-care, you know, like mantras that kind of reinforce that kind of deal. That's the conversation that's happening. It really got me thinking about even the way that I practice self-care on my own. And it made me like want to be like, maybe I've got all of this wrong. Maybe I don't even understand what any of these mean. So I'm going to throw the definitions out there, right? Self-care is a necessary human regulatory function. It's deliberate, it's self-initiated, and it's under your individual control. Some put it in the opposite position of healthcare, and modern medicine sees it as a preventative measure, right? Self-love is having a regard for your own well-being and happiness. Self-acceptance is satisfaction and happiness with yourself. And some think it's necessary for good mental health. And that it includes good self-understanding and realistic and subjective awareness of your strengths and weaknesses. And self-esteem is confidence in your own worth and abilities. All of these definitions were supplied by my good friend Google. You're so good to me, girl. I think self-acceptance is the one I have the most trouble with. Like, if I'm accepting this definition of self-acceptance, I think it does put a whole lot of pressure, I know, on me personally. Like, if I'm going to be practicing self-care, which for me means just lessening the pressure I put on myself and letting myself just like do stuff, just live and not wait for like the perfect time for things to be ideal, and because that makes me incredibly anxious. And then the idea that like it might not be the right time and I might not be the right person, I might not be in the right place, and so things aren't going to work out, that's already enough anxiety that's there. Like, I have that anxiety all the time. Even when I'm going to the store to buy airtime. Like, well, I don't go to the store to buy airtime because cell phone banking. But if I'm going to the store to buy pads, like, that anxiety is there for me because I'm thinking, what if it's not the right time or the right place? Or with basic things, like, my anxiety is on fleek. It's on point. It's always, like, for the most basic stuff, like, it's there taking me from 0 to 300. And so when you add this, like, additional pressure of now I must accept that that's the way that I am, like that's the way that I function, that like my own psychology kind of turns against myself, right? That like my psyche is a young ANC situation. Like when you add that, I must be okay with that, my self-care practice becomes contemptuous because I don't want to be that way. Like I don't like that. It doesn't feel nice. Like feeling like having a young panic attack. Every time I write a letter, like when I'm supposed to write like a letter to my school or to business partners or submit applications for funding or any kind of like thing, I have a young panic attack, and it's the self-care practices that I have that regulate those functions that are kind of like my solace, which say to me, it's okay, fam, to not be where you want to be. Like, it's cool, it's true. If for me to have good mental health, I kind of like I need to be satisfied and happy with this unsatisfactory upsetting circumstance. I don't agree with it. And just generally, like, I think self-care is about you treating yourself well, and that it should be unconditional. It should be like, no matter what's going on, no matter your situation, like, you deserve to be looked after. You deserve to be looking after yourself, irrespective of whether or not you like yourself, whether or not you accept yourself. Like, you deserve to be careful and tender with yourself. So that's what I think. I'm really interested in what you all think. Like I said, hit me up. My love out for this week goes to the South African constituency and my accent. So I'm going to start by explaining why I'm sending a love out to my accent. It's because I didn't know that I sound this way. But the interesting thing about, you know, social media and recording yourself is that you get to listen to yourself. And now I know. So in an effort to accept, right, to be satisfied and happy about the way that I sound, I'm sending myself a love out. Because I also think, I genuinely think it's like cool the way I sound, like mad over enunciating and some vocal fry situation, which is new. It actually came with the throat infection, so now my voice is like an interesting tone to it. Yay illness and disease. And this is African constituency, 60 million of us, about 60 million of us who went out and voted in these local government elections. Thank you for preserving our wonderful baby democracy, right? And thank you for listening to the first episode of this rant. I'm so happy. Well, it's technically the first. It's the first episode of the reboot. I'm happy that it's out, that I did it. And I'm happy that I'm sticking to it. I love you for listening.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.